You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Though dogs may have once been given the moniker of being man's best friend, paws down, the cat now meows supreme. In 2007, a study by the American Veterinary Medical Association estimated there were 81.7 million owned cats in the United States. That was 40 million more cat paws than dog paws padding around our home. If you're a bit math challenged, there are 10 million more cats than dogs sharing our beds and gracing our couches with their fur. Many urban legends abound concerning cats, their behavior, their nutritional and medical needs. The Catalyst program was formed in 2008 to make it perfectly clear that cats make awesome pets and to improve the care and welfare of these furry members of our family. My guest today is Dr. Jane Brunt. She is the executive director of the Catalyst Council. Dr. Brunt is one of the leading feline practitioners in the United States. She owns two cat-exclusive veterinary hospitals in Maryland. And if you couldn't tell, she's a true allurophile, an ardent lover of cats. We'll discuss the Catalyst program, learn how to enhance the lives of cats that share our homes, discover which American cities have been rated as being the top 10 cat-friendly cities, and how to find a great veterinarian for your kitty. And the all-important question, how do you get your cat in that carrier? We'll be right back after this short message.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages. Coast to coast and around the world, it's O'Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. O'Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, this is the place for a special paparazzi treat. Only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Brunt, thank you so much for being with us today. I have a new kitten myself, and I am enjoying the heck out of her.
Oh, aren't they wonderful, Bernadine? It's great what they bring to our lives.
They really do. I've found I've turned off the TV. I don't need it any longer. I just watched this baby scurry through the house, traumatizing my two older cats. I wanted to talk to you about that also. And it is just seeing her investigate, explore, learn, and grow, and eat me out of house and home. I'm amazed at how much these babies eat.
Oh, well, they're growing, and they do have to. They're burning a lot of calories now and growing by leaps and bounds. So good that you're doing that.
I know a question that oftentimes people will ask, and I myself will ask this question naively. Looking at the various foods that are on the market, yes, you see all these various kitten foods, and then they have foods that are supposedly adequate for all lifestyles. Do you really need to feed a kitten food?
We know that kittens have certain needs with regard to their protein requirements and their energy calorie requirements. So really, the companies that put a lot of the research into developmental stages and providing for the needs of each life stage is really something that people should consider. So yes, we do recommend having life stage food and a good quality food for kittens as they're growing.
And that's going to be a good trick, trying to keep the kitten out of the adult food and the adults out of the kitten food. We can but try.
It can be a challenge. And you know, you've got to go with the flow. And if they get into it, they get into it. And you just try and be mindful of that. Having meal times in that situation might help a lot, because then you could more monitor what they're being offered.
Great idea. Now, Catalyst Program. I love the way that it's spelled, C-A-T, big letters, and then A-L-Y-S-T. What does it stand for? Who is this group?
Well, if you think about your days in maybe chemistry, Bernadine, that catalyst is something that creates change. And in a chemical reaction or in a worldwide situation, catalysts are people or events or things that cause change to happen. And really, with the situation with cats now, you mentioned that cats outnumber dogs. Owned cats outnumber dogs by at least 10 million in the United States alone. And we know that they're more popular, America's number one companion, yet we also know that their health care is declining. We know that from between 2001 and 2006, that veterinary care for cats went down by 11%. So that's why, in the face of declining health care with increasing numbers, we decided to form the Catalyst Council. Now, I might add also that in the shelter world, with the increasing numbers of cat relinquishments all across the United States, it's very, very hard often to place cats in homes. So combining shelter efforts and veterinary efforts, we really see a need for promoting cats and promoting cats to get into good homes.
Dr. Brett, do you have any idea why the amount of care that cats were getting, even before we had this economic downturn, why it occurred?
Well, there's lots of speculation. And if you think about the cat in general, what are the barriers to it going to the veterinarian? It can be hard to get into the carrier, like you mentioned. Sometimes they don't always take to car rides, and they're fearful. So those are some of the reasons. The other thing is that people often think that cats are independent and not in need of health care, that they seem to be just fine by themselves. And what we know about cats is really that maybe they are independent, but they're just really pretty good at hiding their signs of being sick. So people often don't recognize that they do need health care until problems are quite advanced. So those are a couple of the reasons.
I totally agree with you, because when a kitty is healthy, a cat is healthy, it eats, it sleeps, it poops, runs around a little bit, and when it's ill, it seems to eat and sleep and poop and run around a little bit and doesn't tell you about it. What are some of the common signs that someone could look for if they are trying to figure out, is my cat healthy or maybe in need of that veterinary attention?
Oh, that's a really great question, because the common signs often aren't very common or visible at all. Sometimes just a decrease in their activity, the cat's sleeping more. People don't recognize that. It's very hard to know that your cat is sleeping 12 hours a day instead of 8. And in fact, that could be a signal of arthritic changes in the cat. Similarly, changes in their appetite, either an increase or a decrease. Talk about increase in an appetite for a minute. Diabetes is very common in cats, and the cat might start to eat more or become a little overweight, and people don't recognize that their cat is ill when, in fact, there's this disease that's ravaging their body. So they're very subtle about their signs, and that's why it's important for people to seek regular veterinary care to stay on top of those problems before they become problematic.
Talking about overweight, that is such a common problem. I see so many cats walking through the door that are really rather rotund, and people think, well, isn't that cute? It's a nice, round, happy kitty. But obesity can be such a problem, and trying to get the weight off the cat, that's even more of a problem. How do you typically address obesity problems with your clients that come in with those chunky monkey cats?
Yeah, well, that's a really difficult problem sometimes, because we know that 40% of our patients are overconditioned or obese. And if you think about the medical situation that goes on with obesity and excess fat, fat itself, we now know, causes inflammation in other organs, for example, the joints. And not just by being overweight can arthritis happen, but there's actually a process that happens by being overweight. So treating it can be very difficult. actually counting calories. So when we talked about your kitties, when we talk about having meal times, that's often very helpful because then you can measure specific amounts and count calories and try and keep them on a good plane of nutrition.
I know that sometimes my clients will say, okay, I am going to feed this food that I don't care if the cat doesn't like it. I'm just going to put it down. I'll put it down for maybe half an hour, and then it's out of here. And I try to explain this is not a good idea to put a cat on a really restrictive, strict diet. Can you explain a little bit why?
Well, we worry about cats not eating just because they don't like it. And if they don't eat a food, whether they're ill or they don't happen to enjoy the meal du jour, then they run the risk of developing a liver problem. It's very serious. It's called hepatic lipidosis. And that's when the cats don't get enough calories and energy from their food, but they start to utilize their own fat stores for energy needs, and then they get into this jaundice situation, and they're very, very ill, and it's very hard to control. So keeping them on a diet that they do like, encouraging them to eat, but in the proper proportions, because the other side of the coin is you don't want them to overeat, become overweight, because then that puts them at risk for diabetes. And we see quite a bit of diabetes, type 2 diabetes in cats, very, very common.
It also seems when I graduated from veterinary school, and it was a while ago, I graduated in 1982, we didn't seem to see diabetic cats to the frequency that we are now. With you being in a feline-only type practice, do you have some rationale as to why we're seeing more diabetes cases these days?
Well, I think a lot of it is because of recognition, that people didn't recognize that cats were diabetic, in fact, and we're seeing more overweight animals. We know that cats don't metabolize carbohydrates very well. They can. And if you think about what the bulk of the food that's offered to cats, it's dry food. And dry food is made from cereals. Cereals and grains, and that's what's high in carbohydrates. So many cats can tolerate dry foods very well without any problems. Other cats, for genetic predisposition reasons or other reasons we don't know at this time, can become diabetic. And so the availability of high carbohydrate foods, free feeding, and cats get addicted. Some will say that they get addicted to dry food, and if it's just left out, then they just eat and they don't know when to stop. Compared to canned foods or higher protein meals, the protein makes them feel more full. They tend to eat less. They tend to stay a little bit leaner.
So am I hearing saying it's better to feed possibly canned food than dry, have set meal times and set amount that you're feeding?
Well, every cat is an individual, and that's one of the beautiful things about them is that they are so different. And households are individual, too. You do have to respect people's lifestyles and their schedules. So if someone is going to be working 14 hours in a day, to think that they can only have a mealtime would be a little bit challenging. But we often recommend that they get mealtimes of canned food. And you measure the calories. It's pretty easy to calculate, well, this can has 92 calories, so half in the morning and a half at night, and then leave the balance down in a dry form for them to nibble at through the day, hopefully graze through the day. So that's the ideal.
Now, looking at most canned foods and packages of foods, it'll have a quantity on there, say, okay, your cat is 10 pounds, it's supposed to eat one can of food a day and a half a cup of this food. But a lot of people have said, boy, if I feed that, my cat puts on weight. Are the companies just trying to sell more food? Where does this feeding recommendations come from?
Well, the companies are trying to make it easy for people to know how much to feed their particular size cat. I don't think anybody's trying to be selling more food and getting more cats overweight, but every cat has a different, just like people, different metabolic rate, so you do have to start from a baseline and count, have your veterinarian help you count those calories and then go from there, because different, and you also just can't assume that a cup of brand X dry cat food and a cup of brand Y dry cat food contain the same amount of calories. There can be very, very large differences in how many calories are in different quantities of different foods.
I'm glad you addressed that, because oftentimes clients will come in to me and say, okay, how much of this food should I feed? It's like, you know, every food's a little bit different. And they'll say, well, what is the best food out there? And sometimes it's what's the best food for your particular pet, as you mentioned, as what agrees to it the best. People are right now still concerned about that pet food recall that occurred several years ago. And I know a lot of my clients are trying to go to the all-natural, home-cooked, or the raw diets. What are your feelings on raw diets in particular?
Well, I get very concerned about raw diets when they're presented in that way. If you think back to the history of cats, well, that's what they ate was raw diets. It was the mouse diet and other rodents and critters, but those were fresh, and those were the days where we didn't have the quality control and the ability to feed cats good quality manufactured diets. Now, the raw diets, particularly because of concerns about E. coli and Salmonella, I'm not in favor of raw diets, and I think that I think it's wise to contact your veterinarian and have those conversations.
I'm always concerned because so many of my clients have young children and they want to feed a raw diet, and I try to impress on them the fact that, okay, maybe your particular cat or dog is not going to have a GI upset from this particular bacteria going through its system, but when it comes out the other end, that bacteria is still problematic. So you can have a zoonotic condition going on, where a disease basically that spread from your animal to your children or to yourself. So always wash those hands, you know, after playing with your cat or dog before you eat yourself.
Exactly. And you're talking about the bacteria. We also know that pets and people can share parasites as well. And keeping your cat, particularly your cat, on parasite prevention is so important. There are parasite medications now that you can just give monthly and apply topically that control roundworms and hookworms. And we know that children can be affected by roundworms and as heartworms as well. Heartworms are spread by mosquitoes. Cats don't have to go outside to get exposed to mosquitoes. So having your cat on preventative is helpful for your cat and helpful for your family.
But if someone, and that's the situation I run into, let me see what you have to say about this. All right, you have children in the family, or in my part of where I practice, there is a very large retirement community around us. And they'll have their cats, they're totally indoor kitties, and I'll say, well, you need to have it on this monthly preventative, but it doesn't go outside. Well, okay, mosquitoes can come in, right. But why do I need internal parasite control? What would be your retort to that question?
Well, I'll tell you a quick story. My mother is in her 80s, and she lives about an hour and a half from me. I went up one time, visited with her, and had a laugh because here was her cat doing the scooting, you know, when they drag their behind across the carpet.
Preferably in front of neighbors and friends, yes.
Right in front of, right between her bed and her bathroom in her bedroom, right across the carpet. So I thought, well, maybe I should just check a stool sample on her cat. She doesn't go outside, but I should probably do that. Well, don't you know, she has roundworms.
Oh, my goodness.
Here she had been carrying them for years. Now there's a question as to, you know, she was supposed to be getting her preventative medication, and my father at the time may not have been as compliant as we would like, but here she had roundworms, and my cat doesn't go out. My mother was at risk because her cat does the scooting on the floor, and she could have gotten roundworms. I was horrified.
It happens even in the best of families. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Right now we're speaking with Dr. Jane Brunt. She is the Executive Director of the Catalyst Program. We've been talking about cat health, and we'll be right back after this short break to talk about more ways to keep your kitty healthy. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly. Right after these messages.
Want to know know what cats like to eat for breakfast? Mice Krispies, of course. Learn everything there is to know about cats on Catitude with your host, Tom Dock. Each week, we'll spotlight a cool cat breed, give up-to-date advice on cat health, and check out spiffy new cat products. So curl up on the couch every week for a perfectly enjoyable time on Catitude, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Brunt, you're just giving me some great information that I can use when I'm talking to my own clients and also trying to convince my own cats that, yes, you don't have to have food available 24/7. You were talking a little bit about arthritis and obesity. That is such a concern because people so many times will think that, oh, my kitty's just getting older and that's why it's moving around more slowly. Many times they're wanting to give it aspirin or they're wanting to give it things like glucosamine chondroitin sulfate or some of their own dog's medication. What are your feelings about giving things like aspirin or dog medications to a cat?
Oh, you have to be very, very careful. We know that cats are not small dogs. And there are many medications that dogs can take that are absolutely not safe for cats. And another thing that people sometimes think is, if I just give a little bit of children's Tylenol, it should be okay for my cat. And in fact, that's very, very deadly. So you want to avoid having any medications for dogs or people administered to your cat without your veterinarian's impact and influence, because what we can do, there are certain anti-inflammatories that have been approved for use in cats. There are other medications that can help their joint surfaces, but actually have your veterinarian look and see, because taking the x-rays, knowing where the problems are where you're going to be able to best help your cat. But you're right, they slow down and people just don't recognize it. It's not like a dog where they're going for a walk on a leash and you suddenly notice that, gee, he's favoring that left front. With cats, they're just laying around more. And people, it's very, very hard to notice that.
What are some of the medications that can be used for cats that a veterinarian would recommend, would prescribe?
Well, there is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug that's been used in the UK and in Britain and now is used here in the United States. That can be used orally off-label. It is available as an injectable, and that will act as a Celebrex type of drug without those kinds of side effects. You do have to watch for kidney side effects. You mentioned using glucosamines, and the combination glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate supplements given on a daily basis will help over time as well. We also like to use the omega-3 fatty acids, and those are fish oil supplements that you can get for cats, and the omega-3s actually act as an anti-inflammatory as well. So often we'll use a combination of things to help inflammation at different stages and at different places in the body. And then there are always the use, if you have to, with cortisone injections or cortisone orally. And occasionally an aspirin at a dose that a cat can tolerate, talk to your veterinarian, is something that we might consider in certain situations.
Well, this is great education. I know that's one of the things that the Catalyst program is trying to do, is to educate cat owners of, you know, what is out there to keep your cat in as good a condition as long as possible. And I loved where they just came up with the top 10 cat-friendly cities in the United States. What were the parameters for the top 10 cities?
Oh, we had so much fun with that. Well, we started with the top 25 U.S. markets, and then we surveyed all of them and got some data from the Census Bureau and the American Veterinary Medical Association. We were looking at, of course, numbers of cats and cats per capita, the number of veterinarians who worked with cats, members of the American Association of Feline Practitioners and American Veterinary Medical Association members, American Animal Hospital Association member hospitals. We looked at some shelter data, what shelters were in those cities and some of the ordinances that they had that were cat-friendly. We actually even gave extra credit if the mayor owned a cat. So it was a lot of fun, and we did identify 10+1 to celebrate as cat-friendly cities. You want to hear what they are?
Very definitely.
Okay, so we have Tampa, Phoenix, San Francisco, San Diego, Portland and Seattle both, Boston, Atlanta. Then in the middle of the country, we had Minneapolis and Denver. And for honorable mention, Ithaca, New York, because that's where the Cornell Feline Health Center is. So we had great fun with that.
Well, I have to be prejudiced since I'm on the West Coast. There's quite a few cities over here, 4 on the West Coast. You mentioned, you know, having veterinarians who were part of feline practices, American Federation of Feline Practitioners, if I got the acronym correct. Why would a person who is a cat owner want to seek out a cat-only practice? So many practitioners see cats and dogs and ferrets and bunnies.
Mm-hmm. And really, the important thing is your veterinarian comfortable with cats? Do they like cats? Do they know cats, even if dogs might come in? Are they members of the American Association of Feline Practitioners? Because they can be practicing on cats and dogs to be a member of the AAFP. In feline-only practices, well, we're bark-free. So that's a big plus for cats that get a little nervous around barking dogs. So that is one big advantage of going to a feline-only practice. But certainly looking for those credentials and for that special spark that people have that love to handle cats. And I might just speak to handling as well. Handling cats is different from handling dogs. We know that if you have a cat that's a little bit afraid and might act like it's going to hiss or react badly, that the first thing you want to do is put that cat at ease and talk slowly and move slowly. Just arousing the cat more by moving quickly and handling the cat or bearing down the cat, that's less conducive, and it's not fun for the cat. So we want to make sure that people understand feline-friendly hospitals and feline-friendly veterinary visits and feline-friendly handling. So that's a lot about what Catalyst is about, is educating both owners as well as veterinarians about the best way to handle cats.
And we had somewhat alluded to getting that kitty into the carrier so we can get it to the veterinarian. What are your tricks? Because mine see the carrier come out and is like, uh-oh, I know what this means. Or if I put him in a room and close the door, uh-oh, mom's going to pick me up and put me in a carrier. I know that's coming.
That's exactly right, because they've come to learn that the only time the carrier comes out is when they're going to get jammed in there and go to the veterinarian. And that's not, of course, true with everybody. But the first thing you want to think about is, how would the cat look at that? What kind of carrier would make it friendly to get into? So you want to choose a carrier initially that the top opens up or the whole thing completely opens up, rather than one that has a little door on the end. So a friendly carrier, and then leaving it out. Have it be part of the furniture. Have it be a place that the cat can be comfortable going to. I keep my carriers out under a table in my family room, and so that they're always there. And then it's less of a threat to see it all of a sudden come out. The other thing that's important is to condition them to going in and coming out of the carrier, even when you're not going anywhere. So if you can start when they're a little kitten, just to have the carrier around, let them spend a little time in there, positive reward with the treat, and open the carrier, close the carrier, put it in the car, don't go anywhere, bring it back out, and just all of that conditioning where they have positive feedback and positive interactions, then you can gradually start the car and increase the time in the car, drive around, and eventually they get used to the travel. It's not a threat because they're already used to it and nothing bad happened.
Sounds like a lot of work, but it sounds like it's really worth it in the long run, because now your kitty is She's saying, oh, it's nothing different. You know, I've been in this little box before. It's really not all that bad.
Exactly. And it can be very, very quick. My own older cat was car sick when I adopted him as an adult. And really, it took only about 3 or 4 times of the increasing time in the carrier and then in the car. And he never gets car sick anymore. He doesn't cry on the way. And it's getting them used to it, because when they're not used to something, they get fearful. And that's when that whole thing starts, where they get aroused and they don't like to do it the next time.
And so many people will still do this, and my practice is on a very busy street. They will put it in their arms, maybe wrap it in a towel, keep it in the car that way. Maybe somebody is driving along with them, and they'll hold on to the cat. And then they walk from their car to my front door with a cat in a blanket or just in their arms, and it drives me crazy. Because all you need is to slam on the brakes, and then you have your airbags go off, or the kitty gets scared and gets out of your arms and is now running down the street and could easily get smooshed.
Yes, yes, that worries us tremendously. So cats in carriers, belt the carrier in on the back seat, and that is the safest, easiest way for the cat, for you, for everybody. So cats and carriers, and just get them used to it. I absolutely agree with that, Bernadine.
And then also wearing that identification at all times, too. Clients will come in with their kitties not having any identification on them, saying, oh, it's an indoor cat. It never gets out. And it's like, mm-hmm. Remember that time last week when all of a sudden you came in with the groceries and the kitty scooted out, or it had been seeing the bird outside, or in my part of the world, earthquakes, fires, floods, things can happen. Your kitty gets outside.
Oh, sure. And workmen come in and they don't realize it. And before you know it, the cat's scooted out of the door. So identification is important. Collars and tags let people know from a distance if your cat does get out that it's owned. Also, permanent identification in case they slip out of their collar and tags. And if they're rescued, when they go to the shelter, all the shelters and all the animal controls now and veterinarians, we all scan for a microchip, and that's permanent ID that can reunite you with your lost cat. There's a quick story that I have from Seattle, actually, one of the top 10 cat-friendly cities. Man was moving for his job from Seattle to Tucson, and he was packing up, and his cat, RV, the cat was named, escaped from his house. Well, he was beside himself, delayed his move, looked all over the neighborhood for the cat, put up signs, called animal control, did not find RV. Mm. And he did have to move to Tucson. Well, 8 months later, a cat is presented to the King County Animal Control, scanned for a microchip. It was RV.
After oh, my eight, goodness.
She was found. He was reunited with her. Happy ending. So more people need to be aware of the benefits of permanent identification, the microchipping. Absolutely.
Bringing up cats and going to shelters, I know that in the month of June, that was Adopt a Cat Month, telling people, go to the shelter, adopt cats. Any idea how many cats every year end up in a shelter?
Oh, it's mind-boggling. What we do know is that, by and large, 70% of all cats that go into shelters are euthanized. And it's a horrible statistic. It's a horrible statistic to think that 3 out of every 4 cats that come into a shelter are put to sleep and only one gets into a home. So there is a lot of support for making sure that cats are spayed and neutered, making sure that cats are adopted into loving homes, and trying to increase awareness about the problem with cats and the overpopulation. Do you know that many shelters, even in various areas, have to import dogs to meet up with the dog adoption demand?
Where cats, oh my goodness.
Universally, cats are a problem in shelters. So hopefully by increasing the awareness of that through the Catalyst Council, through all of the shelter initiatives with the Society of Animal Welfare Administrators, and they're involved in the Catalyst Council, and all the great people in the shelter and welfare world calling attention to this problem, we're going to see the end of that in years in my career. I'm convinced of it. We're going to get it under control through both birth control and increased adoptions, and we're going to do it.
So all cats should be neutered, male, female?
Well, you have the breed cats, and the owned cats that people show and breed, and certainly it wouldn't be appropriate to discontinue those wonderful breeds. There's some terrific personality breeds, and the Cat Fancy Association does a great job at identifying the different personalities if people are interested in specific breeds. And for example, we know that a couple of the breeds tend to be hypoallergenic for many people. That's one of the reasons that people give up their cats, because one of their family members they found has become allergic to their cat. So there are some breeds that do have less of the feline antigen, we call it FELD1, that causes people to become allergic.
I know, I'm a veterinarian, I'm allergic to cats and dogs. Most of the time I'm doing okay with cats. All of mine are little domestic short hairs, but if I get around a Siamese, they drive my allergies crazy. And a very good girlfriend of mine, she can't handle domestic short hairs, but she owns a Siamese and does just wonderfully. So everyone is so different.
So true with cats as well. So many different individuals.
And at shelters, are you basically just going to be finding the domestic short hair, the alley cat, so to speak?
Well, there are lots of different short hairs, long hairs, mixed breeds of cats in the UK. In Britain, they call them moggy cats, M-O-G-G-I-K-E. I think that's adorable. And purebreds, or cats that appear to be purebreds, do crop up there periodically. Siamese are very... have very obvious features as to some of the other cats. But, you know, you've probably seen the gray cat that comes in and the owners think that it's a Russian blue, and it may very well be. So we don't quite have all that genetic testing for cats down like we do for dogs, but we'll get there.
They'll have that wisdom test one of these days soon, I hope, for kitties, because I like to know. I have the gray cat, and I tell people, well, she could be a Russian blue, but I have a feeling she's just a little gray domestic short hair. The Catalyst Program, I appreciate you chatting about it today. What can people do to support the Catalyst Program, and in particular, cats?
Well, I so much appreciate you asking that, Dr. Cruz, because they need to have conversations about cats, and that's what we're about, is celebrating the cat, all of its wonderful attributes. It is America's number one companion. So if they could just take a peek at the website, catalystcouncil.org, and sign up for our newsletter. We have a newsletter that goes out once a month that talks about some fun facts on cats, like, did you know that every nose print is as individual to a cat, like every snowflake is different? We have in the newsletter information about upcoming events that are cat-related, and on the new website, you'll be able to submit us pictures of your photos. So we want you to do that. We want you to have conversations with people that don't have cats. We like to call them people who are cat owners and they don't know it yet. Because it's, you know, when you have that first relationship and you have that bond, it means so much. It is such a wonderful feeling. So have those conversations. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. You can reach us through LinkedIn. So have those conversations. Blog. Talk about cats. Celebrate cats. Adopt another cat. You know what? That's it. That's it, Dr. Cruz. You know your active little kitten?
Uh-huh.
She needs a friend.
Another one. They'll give me 4 cats.
All right.
What's 4? They're kind of like potato chips. After you have one, you can't stop. You need another one and another one.
There you go.
And adopting a slightly used cat at a shelter, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. You can decide what's going to be best for your family, either the kitten or getting a mature cat. And I have a feeling Whiskers, no matter if it's an adult, are going to be the kitten. They're going to have a couple of bent whiskers along the way.
Well, introducing them carefully, just like you would introduce them to gradually to a carrier. You want to introduce the new cat or kitten in your home and initially keep it, you know, in a room by itself. And if you have cats, then trade some of the bedding and then supervised chaperoned visits, if you will, and just gradually increasing that time together. So it works out. Make sure that the owners, and I know that you talk about this, is having enough litter boxes spread all throughout the home in different places for the cats, and making sure the litter boxes are big enough so that cats are comfortable going in them.
And not being ambushed as you're coming out or going in by the other ones, very definitely. So that's, you know, you could have the more cats, definitely quite a few litter boxes around the house. Well, Dr. Jane Brunt, I totally appreciate you being with us today. You've given us great information on why cats are the number one companion animal in the United States. If people need some more information, catalystorganization.org, correct?
Catalystcouncil.org.
That'll be on our website, so you can go there, get all the information, learn all about cats there is. The newsletter sounds like a great idea. I love trivia, so that's something I'm going to have to subscribe to myself. The goal of this show is always to educate the pet owner to be the best pet owner that you can be. If you have questions, always ask your own veterinarian primarily, but then you can always contact me, the pet doctor, at PetLifeRadio.com. I want to thank our producer, Mark Winter, for doing a great job making us sound so good. So please do tune in again next week. We'll have more information about you and your pets. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz, the pet doctor. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.